Hi, Dan.
Hi, Jason.
So explain to me how Apple scans images on your... It sounds very simple. I don't think it's going to need more than one or two or three or four or five or six or seven different explanations for people to understand what they're doing.
Well, I mean, there's explanations from Apple, then there's explanations from people who had Apple explain it to them, then there's the explanations from the people who didn't have anything explained to them.
Yep. Yeah.
Those are all options
for explanations. People who read the white paper, people who didn't read the white paper, people who just got angry because they like to get angry at Apple. Those all
and on any side of that issue, we should be clear. There are people who are angry in one direction, there's people who's angry in another direction. I thought you and Mike did a really good long show about this, so people should listen to that.
Yep.
We did a really stupid show about it on Rebound, so I'm not going to say you should listen to that, but you know, it was one of the more serious conversations we have had on that show. But it is, you know, it is a show in which we tell a lot of jokes, so that is a tough subject to sort of put inside that kind of conversation. But I was surprised. At least one of my co-hosts on that show came down very firmly in the Apple's not doing enough. And I think you and Mike discussed that a little bit, too, in terms of where the company decided to draw the line. It's an interesting debate. And then, you know, they have obviously, as rollouts go, this has not been their smoothest.
You linked to Joanna Stern's video interview with Craig Federighi, which, by the way, is just totally damage control because they thought that the white paper and the announcement that was just sort of silently released last week would be enough. And they've had a series of reclarifications that has now led to
they keep moving up, too,
Tim
right?
Next, like, right?
I would not bet against Tim Cook having to discuss this at some point.
I think they didn't want Tim to have to describe the technical aspects of it, and Craig is good at that because that's his bit. But
yeah, even there, Craig, you saw him struggling at some points to try and explain it in a way for lay people, essentially, because he definitely verged into the jargon at a few points.
Okay.
And Joanna Stern did a fantastic job of like,
let me pause
and explain what that means. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah, no, it's a really good video, and you don't have to be a Wall Street Journal subscriber to watch it, and you should go watch it, and it's linked to on Six Colors. But watching that video, I actually have a new take, Dan. New take.
Oh. Okay.
On this story. I'm workshopping, and I'm going to workshop it here. Here it is.
Yeah, sure.
I mean, before I give you the new take, though, look what I did. I'm going to tease that, and then I'm going to say, just again, to be clear, isn't it really interesting that Apple has realized, like, Apple, I'm fascinated by the fact that Apple didn't anticipate all the criticism.
Right.
Seemed really surprised by it. And then has done all of these different levels of kind of explanation. I call it damage control, but it really is like people are yelling at Apple and Apple needs to get somebody else out there to try and stop the yelling. And I think it's self-inflicted because they conflated all those features together. And I understand they're all child protection features, but they're so easy to, they're complicated technically and easy to misunderstand and to conflate. Mm-hmm. And I think they didn't entirely do it, but now I'm going to get to my take, which is I think Apple is a victim of its own hubris here.
Oh, Jason, it is very funny that you said that because I will just say very briefly as an aside, the column I turned in yesterday for Macworld, which will show up on Monday, has a large conclusion at the end of it that talks about Apple's hubris and how they're their own worst enemy.
Yeah. Yeah. So here's the thing. When you look at that Federighi interview, it's very clear that their whole pitch here, and I think this is literally, they're like, why now? Why did you do this? And he said, well, because we built this technology. Like, we had the ability to
figure it out.
We figured out how to do this, right? Well, here's what I think. I think Apple knew it needed to do something about child abuse media. And all its competitors just scan all your photos.
Yeah.
In the cloud.
In the cloud, yeah. Right.
And somebody at Apple was like, oh no, we can do better than that. And it's some combination of we are better than them and we can do better than that. And why don't we invent an incredibly complicated thing that runs on the client because we're so enamored, and this, my Macworld column this week mentions this, we're so enamored with the idea that running on the device is private,
secure. Yeah,
and running on a server is insecure, and so we're going to run it on the device. We're going to do it all client side. It's going to be involve lots of cryptography. It's probably the same people who figured out the Find My system, and what it's going to do is it's going to show that Apple is one step above all its competitors in that they're just training their, you know, eyes on all your photos on their servers and analyzing them all one by one. And Apple cares about you so much that it's built this complicated system where Apple doesn't scan all your photos. Your device looks at them, and even your device, which I thought was a nice line by Federighi, even your device doesn't know actually whether they match or not until the threshold, which we now know is around 30, is reached. And that's all, like, I think the hubris part of it really is like this combination of we're better than them, because Apple could have just built a CSAM scanner in iCloud, since they have access to those photos anyway. They could do that just like Facebook does, just like Google does, right? And they could do that, but they don't want to do that, because not only would that be mean they have now, you know, they're not different from the rest. They are looking at your photos for this thing. And there's very little uproar about the fact that, you know, cloud services scan all your photos. Like, they're like, oh, Apple's watching us. Like all your cloud stuff is being scanned. But it's also the hubris of, like, we can build a better mousetrap. We can build this beautiful thing that is constructed in such a way. And it is brilliant cryptographically and in terms of, like, privacy intention. I think a bit of brilliant engineering. It's very impressive that they built this complex thing. But their downfall, and this is what I wrote about on Macworld this week, their downfall is that they don't seem to have realized, or at least it never percolated up to the top of this project, that from a user's perspective, the spy is no longer on someone else's device or in the cloud. The spy is now on my phone.
Right, and that's highlighted in the interview, I think, when Joanna Stern asks, who owns my phone, right? Is this my phone? Or is this, like, something that Apple is, like, graciously allowing me to use, right? Because the idea of having a system on your phone that is scanning things makes it feel like, well, there's a thing on here that's outside of my control.
Yeah.
I can't do anything about that.
And I understand why people at Apple don't think that way, right? Which is why oftentimes you get in these areas where there's a disconnect like this, and you can see that it's not, like, two sides, one of which is disingenuous. It really is a disconnect in the way of thinking about it. The way Craig Federighi describes it, and I'm sure this is how Apple thought about it through and through, is it's not Apple scanning your photos on your device. It's the pipeline for iCloud uploads,
right,
generating this process that generates this thing that can ultimately turn on a light when you go over the threshold, but otherwise is kind of faceless and invisible because they've built it in to the pipeline of uploads, which, you know, is something that Mike and I talked about too, which is where they placed this is telling. And one of the reasons I think it's telling is because it shows that Apple thinks that it's not really on your device. In fact, Federighi referred to it as being a hybrid of your device and the cloud, and that one can't do it without the other. But, like, from a layperson's perspective, there's software running on my phone that's looking at my photos. Even though from Apple's perspective, it's like, no. It's in the pipeline of the upload. It's in the upload queue, basically.
Right.
So it nothing will go into it unless it's going to be uploaded to iCloud Photos, which is true, and it's clever. And if you think about it, you're like, okay, that's actually quite reasonable. But if you boil it down to its simplest idea, which is going to happen, and, you know, the fact is that consumer confidence and trust and things like that are not all about complexity. Sometimes they're about the simple idea that, oh, just to coin a phrase, whatever is on your iPhone stays on your iPhone. That even though it's in the pipeline, it doesn't matter. It's on your phone, right?
Yeah.
And from the other perspective, they also have chosen not to scan the photos on your phone.
Right. Well, I mean, again, and that's a damned if you do, damned if you don't situation right there, which this entire situation may be. I think it is trying to calculate the odds on this feature actually shipping with iOS 15.
Never tell me the odds, Dan.
Yeah, well, I'm not good at math anyway, so.
Okay, good.
You know, so much consternation over this. A lot of it, as we've, you know, given the fact that we've discussed so much of it, a lot of it, I think, earned. I mean, there is a lot to parse here. And I think I keep coming back to the fact that I do think they started out with the best of intentions And they try to, as you said, create something that they thought was better, that they were holding themselves to some standard, right? Of saying privacy is kind of a, you know, we have planted our flag in talking about the privacy of this platform, and we need to maintain that in some way. And so offshoring it to the cloud service was a loophole, because they're like, well, we never really said anything about privacy on our servers, right? I mean, like, we didn't tout that in ads. We just talked about your phone. And so kind of putting it right there in that gateway, you know, you wonder if they just shifted it over and were like, well, what if it just scanned it on the ingest side, like as it's coming up? But then you have the problem of like, well, now we can't say we're shipping the same operating system and have the same process in every country in the world, right? Like, that has been one of their other argument points here, which is like, this database is on the device. We don't sell, you know, we don't distribute different OSs for China or the US.
Right.
I have questions about that because of that whole thing with Russia, too. Clearly, there are country-specific things
somewhere.
Sure, but they're
all in the image, I think, is the idea. It's just the same way that the Chinese social networks are turn-onable in China, but they're not. And the ones that aren't, but it's all location-based, like country-based. So the behavior changes, but it's still one OS image, which is, yeah. I mean, some degree of what they're doing and what they've been doing all along is building their technology in such a way that allows them to say, we can't do that. It's not built that way, right?
Right.
That's what they're doing here, really.
Here's the real dilemma, I think, that they have, literally kind of dug themselves into, which is, I don't know what they do here. Either they roll the system out as planned, they're going to get a lot of flack about it, and I think it, rightfully so in many places, and there are going to be a lot of questions from now on about, well, how do we set up this? How do we set this up to know whether or not this system has been compromised, right? Like, you know, is this a, yeah, they've done stuff in the past where they do like the warrant canaries, right? Like where they put up something and they, you know, it disappears quietly.
This has never happened to us. And then if that statement disappears, you know what happened to them.
Exactly. Even if they can't positively say that something happened.
Right.
Is it going to be that kind of situation? Or are they going to decide to maybe hold off or roll back or not do this? All of which opens a whole separate issue, because it's like, well, now that you know the technology exists where you can catch these people, is it responsible for you not to be trying to do any of this?
I think most likely this technology is just going to roll out. I think, though, there is definitely a chance, not going to put a percentage on it, but there's definitely a chance that the result of this whole thing is that if Apple has to roll this back, what Apple's going to do is then just announce server-side scanning, right? And just say, we're going to just follow industry practice and we're just going to do it on the server. And we've heard your feedback and we're just going to do what Google does and what everybody else does, which is scan for this material on the server. Because ultimately, I think that they could have done that. And there's been speculation, and I've speculated about it a little bit, that this is part one of a multi-stage process that allows them to actually finally encrypt their backups and encrypt everything so they can't see the photos. Because the question would be, but what about CSAM? And the answer would be, aha, but we invented a whole new way to do that. I do think, though, that it's also possible that that's not happening, and that the truth is that Apple just got really enamored with this idea and they thought that it would be a privacy win for them, and ironically it's turned into a privacy loss. And I could see them, I don't think it's the most likely scenario, but I could see them backtracking and saying, we've heard your feedback and we're just going to go with what they'll frame as the industry standard practice of scanning for this material in the cloud. Because for all of the comments that they make, because, you know, they're trying to sell their particular point of view here, of course, as they should. It's that's their role as Apple to do that. They're trying to sell it as, well, we didn't want to scan all your photos. Everybody else scans all your photos, and we didn't want to do it. There is a counter argument there, which is, why not? Like, why not? Like, if you're saying, well, once you start scanning everybody's photos in the cloud, who knows what you could be scanning them for? Well, that's where Apple's trustworthiness comes in. And you say, Apple only scans your photos for this one thing. We do it when we receive the upload from you. We have a system in place cryptographically on our cloud servers that scans this in a voucher and only meets it for a threshold, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But, they didn't want to do it that way. So,
well, yeah, I mean, and again, trying to create a system that is bulletproof just opened up all sorts of other little loophole questions about these things, right? Like, I understand you set a mathematical threshold in which you feel unlikely to make false positives, but does that mean that having 30 of these images is okay? Like, you know, that's
29.
That's a tricky distinction to make, right? And it's not, they're not saying it's strictly 30. No, they're not saying what the number is, but
that's why I'm surprised. And I know Mike and I talked about this, but that's why I'm surprised we have not yet seen, or at least I have not yet seen, some children's rights organization lambaste Apple and the rest of the tech industry for not going far enough to scan devices for this and saying it's so easy to turn this off. And then they can just, they can continue to hide. Why aren't you scanning on building in software to scan all your devices? I know Apple's answer to that, which is we are not going to turn into that level of kind of like a privacy violation of people's devices. We do believe people's devices are their castles. Ironically, though, that's where they've tripped up here, is by building the system. That's where we are, is they are they're hoist by their own petard, basically.
Yes, yeah. And I think that some of that comes into play as well when you're talking about some of these other options that we're laying out here, right? Like, I think one of the things that somebody pointed out that I thought was a great, sort of dilemma question was, so when you're talking about stuff that's on the server, I feel like, you know, when you have used, you know, signed up to use iCloud and using iCloud Photos, right, you've clicked through all those internal terms and conditions, right? You know, if it's somewhere in there, there's like, hey, we don't allow for this stuff. And if we find that you have it, we'll report you, right? Like, seems like, all right, fine. It is a little weirder just conceptually, and I realize the difference is maybe slight, but the idea of them scanning your photos and then reporting that information without ever being asked to do so, right, is a strange and potentially uncomfortable process where it's like, we have not been issued a warrant because anybody suspects you of this thing. We are proactively looking into this and deciding whether or not we need to report you to law enforcement. And if you're using a service which includes those terms, I feel like that to me strikes me as the reasonable balance of that situation. But if you're on your device,
well,
that feels very different because they have done this whole thing where they talked about, what is the security of your device? Can you be compelled to give up your password? Can you be compelled to give up your fingerprint scan, right? Like, where does that reasonable right extend?
So the tragedy of this is that I really do think Apple's heart's in the right place, and that Apple was doing this because they wanted to do better than the rest of the industry.
Sure.
The tragedy of it. And I think that the system is brilliant, right? It's brilliant in that,
technologically speaking.
Yeah, it's an algorithm that is based on these hashes. It's happening on your device. There's the threshold. Like, the whole thing is meant to be so that Apple doesn't have to look at your photos on the server. Now, we can ask that question, like, well, why not? Just look at the photos on the server like everybody else. And, you know, I'm not using iCloud Photos because I think that my photos can't be subpoenaed or something, right? Like, that's not, I don't think that's a part of the value proposition of iCloud Photos. But, like, so it is brilliant, but the problem is that they've stepped on a landmine, and or to use a different metaphor, they've crossed this threshold by being on the device. And in my Macworld column, you know, I hate to use the slippery slope arguments, because in my column I say their heart's in the right place. The problem is that they have crossed a threshold by putting something something that is on your device that is watching what you're doing. And in this case, it's watching what you're uploading to the cloud. It's very calibrated. And yet, it is hard not to worry about the future of these devices that are so important to us, and how law enforcement and authoritarian governments in general want more, as much access as they possibly can. We've seen the history of that, which is, even in places that are not authoritarian governments, law enforcement doesn't care about your privacy. Law enforcement will start to break, and they will start using their access for all sorts of things that go beyond the most urgent matters. We've seen it time and again. It happens. And I'm not saying that I am against the FBI or against various law enforcement agencies, but I am saying that they would prefer to not read you your rights. They would prefer to get full access to your phone, and because it would make their jobs easier. Well, and part of being in a society is balancing their desires with the privacy rights of people.
You can't count on, it's not standards is quite what I want to use, but like you know, accepted tacit agreements, right, of like where those
exactly.
lines go.
Well,
I'm thinking in particular of the example from a couple months ago with that flight that went over Belarusian airspace and basically got detained.
Right.
And it's like, this is not a thing that is done, right? We all agree free air travel and the way the system works throughout needs to be respected. But all it takes is one country just decides, I don't care about those rules. I want to get that journalist on that plane.
And again, not to push this too hard, but I'll just say everybody's against the exploitation of children. So nobody's going to stand up for it. Just like everybody after 9/11, everybody was against terrorism. But then you allow, because everybody's against it, you're like, yeah, well, in this case, this is very extreme. Let's allow this to happen.
Right.
But once the wedge is in the door, you know, again, I hate making slippery slope arguments, but here it's like we've seen it time and again. Once the wedge is in the door, then it's like, well, okay, but now we want to use it for this. And that's also bad, right? And it just keeps on happening until you've eroded various rights. And that's what Apple has opened the door to here, even though they have no intention and they've built it very carefully. We don't know what the future holds. I have a fear. And I did just read Gnomon by Nick Harkaway, which is nobody should probably read it because although I gave it 5 stars and I think it's brilliant, it is very long and a very dense read, and it's a science fiction novel. But I will just say, here's the short version, TLDR. It's set in a future Great Britain where everything on every device and there are cameras everywhere, and it's all fed into a system where machine learning accesses and analyzes and then pops out with crimes and, you know, you need therapy and all these things. And it is a 1984-esque dystopia in a way, and yet in another way it posits the argument of like, but isn't society better assuming the system actually works? But it is a fascinating little question about like, what if Big Brother is just an algorithm? And most of the time, it doesn't do anything, but it sees everything. And that, I was thinking about that a lot this week, because this is, again, a far cry from that, but it is bringing up the subject, which is, what if the tech giants who control the devices that we rely on for our lives are subverted, whether they want to be or not, into analyzing, you know, where else do we have to retreat to a private life if we can't trust our phones? And that is not about defending people who view these images or commit child abuse or terrorists or anything like that. But it is this thought that you can go to a point by which everybody is now has the potential of being surveilled. And it's a scary future to ponder.
The challenge you're dealing with here is fundamentally this idea, first of all, of, and this is endemic, I think, to the tech industry, is this idea of these kinds of things can be agnostic in terms of the intent of the user, right? Like, oh, it can be used for good and it can be used for evil. But I think tech tends to overemphasize, this is great, and doesn't think enough about things that can be abused. And the problem is, you run into this situation. I'm going to also quote an equally literate work, the movie The Rock.
Ah, yes.
In which they talk, the evil MacGuffin is like a nerve gas. I think it's a real gas, but it doesn't work the way they show in the film. Anyways, in discussing it early on in the film, Nicolas Cage's character is asked, how bad is it? And he says, it's one of those things we wish we could disinvent. And I think that's the problem. Fundamentally, once you have come up with these systems, they're there. They're out there. I mean, it's like nuclear splitting the atom, right? Once you learn how to do it, you can't control it anymore. Someone else will figure out how to do it. Someone will figure out how to use it for bad purposes. It can be used for good purposes as well, but you can never get rid of it. And that is, I think, where a lot of the objections into this come in, is this idea of like, it's kind of even broader than a slippery slope argument, but it's like, once it's there, it is never going away.
And it's normalized, right? Then the next time you ask for something like this, there isn't the hubbub that happens the first time, if this is the first time. And then it's quieter the third time. And then it's quieter the fourth time.
So I think all of those things are challenges, right? Because people refer to it as opening the door. And I think there is a, again, even if it's not intended for that purpose, and even if we're not, feel confident that Apple would never allow this, take this wild scenario. 10 years from now, Apple is totally tanked. Somebody buys up their assets who doesn't care as much about that. And all of a sudden, they're willing to acquiesce to these demands. 20 years from now, 30 years from now. It's unlikely, but it could happen. You know, it's hard to make absolutes in this business and say this will never occur.
And
because you cannot guarantee that.
And if you have, you know, a government comes to you and says you can't, you know, if the U.S. government comes to Apple and says you have to put the system in, like, does Apple say, well, we're shutting down? No.
Yeah.
And in fact, if Tim Cook were to say, no, we're not going to do that, they would, you know,
fired.
They'd fire Tim Cook and put in somebody who will. And like that is, you can't count on the continuity of today's people who are being careful about this. And again, I think that this is a tragedy in the sense that Apple's trying to do the right thing here. But I think that Apple stepped in it because they crossed that threshold that is inevitably going to be crossed if it hasn't been crossed already by somebody more surreptitiously, but now it's just even more so we have to think about this stuff. And
this gets to the point of the Macworld column for next week that I wrote, which is Apple is now at such a level that basically the only threats to its existence are, because it's the size of a country, like other countries or governments.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, when you get to the point where it's like, well, I'm not just worrying about whether my product is successful or whether, you know, we are operating at a profit or whatever. But your question, your problem is you're running afoul of, well, you have so much control that the only people who can regulate you at all are like the governments who may not have the best of intentions at times, or may have good intentions but don't know how to act on them. You're in a special place. And big tech in general, I think, is a lot. There are a lot of companies that are in that space, but Apple is also the biggest one in the world, and they have taken a stand on this issue in other places, which makes them even more kind of have a target on their back because of it.
I'm also going to quote a very highfalutin bit of culture, which is this weekend's Incomparable episode, which is Jurassic Park.
Ah,
scientists were so busy asking if they could do it that they never asked if they should. And that's, I mean, as silly as all that is, I mean, that's the truth of it is, as you point out, tech tools are not good or bad. It's how they're used. And you can build something with the best intention and use it with the best intention. But that technology, yes, it becomes normalized. And I in walking through it from my Macworld column, it's funny. The more I thought about it and the more I worked through it as I was working on that column, two things happened. One is I walked through the process of the what ifs for this particular implementation, and it made me admire what Apple's trying to do here. Because the what if is like, well, what if China? And it's like, all right, first off, China has access to the iCloud servers in China anyway. So China may be scanning all your photos in China regardless. Okay, so what if China wants to do it on the phone with a hash of illegal, you know, forbidden images, which I'm sure they have, right? And Apple would say, well, no. Okay, but what if they have to do it? It's like, well, but it's still, and Apple says, well, okay, you're making us do this, but we'll just put the hash in with the CSAM hashes. So it's going to be just for China. It's only on iCloud upload. So all of your people who are against this will just turn it off. And they'll say, well, no, you have to leave it on. It's like, well, we can't do that. Or, you know, you have to move the scanner so it's everything that's in the camera. And they'll say, well, we didn't build that feature. And what's brilliant about what Apple's done right now is Apple wants to put it at the point where instead of a country coming and saying, we have some new hashes for you, a country has to come and say, please build a feature for us that lets you spy on people on the phone.
Right.
And that isn't, you know, it's a harder thing to ask. And I do believe that if you follow that through, then when Apple says Apple will refuse all these requests, you can kind of believe them. Because the truth is, even as much as China is valuable to Apple, I don't think Apple is going to build a special user spying feature and put it in iOS because it's demanded of them. And the current feature they built is not that feature, right? They can't. It's not the same. They would need to build a new feature for it. So
right. They walk on eggshells already in their relationship with China,
right.
But I think that they have decided that is the acceptable cost of doing business.
They've architected this in a way that it's not just, let's give you some metadata. It would literally be this huge thing where they'd have to say, you just have to build a whole new feature for us. And I think that would be easier to say no, and that they would probably have to say no, because otherwise they would be building spy features into iOS. And I think that they can't. even with their relationship with China, I think they can't go that far.
That would damage them. I mean, everywhere
at
is
least,
the problem,
and again,
right?
Yes, it's, maybe future management would be different, and whatever. But let's just say. So that was one thing. Is like the more I thought through, I thought that a lot of these arguments about this particular implementation actually reveal how Apple has tried to build it in a way that it cannot be easily subverted into something else because of the limitations they put on it. But the other part of my mind as I was working through this was what we've talked about, which is, yes, but if technology continues to push toward scanning content on your device and flagging it, you risk pushing down a road where your device is spying on you and you can't trust information on your device. And right. that may be inevitable. It may not happen. I don't know. But it's a serious enough issue that I think it merits serious conversation. And so that's why hot takes on this are bad, right? That's why hot takes on this are bad, because it's both of these things. It is both of these things at once. It is Apple trying really hard to do right in order to stop something bad, but it's also a little bit of a foreshadowing of a really dystopian world where we can't trust our own devices.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think it's... It is a super nuanced issue, and it was, let's also be clear, if it didn't come up here, it was going to come up somewhere else eventually.
Oh, yeah. I think that Apple, I mean, was anticipating it coming up somewhere, right? Like, and again,
that why now question is, does not, the answer they gave is not satisfying,
because maybe
the truth
it out now is not something was going on here. I think even if all they thought was that it was going to ultimately be a story about why Apple wasn't trying to stop CSAM because they only found 30 cases or whatever, whereas Facebook found thousands or tens of thousands, right? Like it was hanging out there that Apple wasn't doing its part in this thing, even though, as I said, although that thing is very, very, very bad, it is also, because it is very bad, a useful battering ram to force companies like Apple to police content. And it's a good first start. If you're somebody who intends to push this down into other kinds of crimes and then, you know, other kinds of questionable uses beyond the crimes, you would start with something like this, because this is like, you know, baseball and apple pie. It's like, of who isn't against this, right? Like, we can all agree, and then you go from there. And so that also troubles me, because like it is this heinous thing. But it does. It feels a little bit like why this is, because this is the one that nobody's going to stand up and say we shouldn't police for this, right? So this is the one you use as the battering ram.
Yeah, yeah. It's. I don't think it's the last time we're going to be talking about it, and I think it's. No.
I hope it is, but it's not.
It's not. It doesn't seem like it. And we'll see. We'll see how that ends up shaking out when they've still got about a month probably before they're shipping iOS 15. So a lot can change in a month. A lot's changed in a week.
Yeah. Yeah. So we'll keep watching it. I think everybody out there who listens to this knows that we're not in the hot takes business. And I think that
takes
this story, I think this story is a good example of how you can see. Like I understand people whose entire thing is tech freedom and internet freedom and, you know, libertarian tech type people. I understand how this is an opportunity for them to react. And yet
the thing is, no matter what Apple announced with regards to that, I don't think they would have reacted any differently. I think that's the telling part to me, is that I don't think the reactions would have been markedly different if, for example, it had been server-side scanning or whatever. And I think the challenge there is, for me, and I tweeted a little bit about this, which was maybe a mistake, is that I think it's presented very much as an all-or-nothing proposition, whereas I don't think that's the case. I understand why that idea is put out there. And again, as I said in my tweet thread about this last week, you can look at all my writing. I have been very strongly against backdoor encryption. I think what Apple did here is, as you said, clever. It is very, they worked very hard to find a way that they would not have to essentially build a backdoor.
Yep.
But it's still, you know, there are still questions to be raised there. But I think that there is no 100% privacy is not a thing that exists. I think it's noble to try and maintain as much of it as we can, especially against the large forces that seem to push against it. But it is also, you know, pretending that this is a black and white issue is to me facile.
Yeah,
and
I think
naive.
Though that Apple, you know, Apple has sort of said that if you want to be what's on your phone is private, and I think the real message here is what's on your phone is private, but you need to turn off iCloud.
Well, yeah, I mean, but the flip side of that is what's on your phone is private. However, if you are arrested and they can get into your
phone.
That's
true, with your biometrics, and they
right.
can compel you to
or,
give your face.
With the, and this was linked into a smaller story that didn't make as many waves this week, but Apple settled their deal with Corellium, which makes the software that can kind of help security researchers hack into phones.
Right.
And as we've seen, law enforcement is capable of hacking into phones when it really needs to.
Right.
Your information is never 100% secure.
So
that's just something you need to deal with.
Yeah,
it's all about thresholds and
one more thing. About this, which is we haven't talked at all about this other aspect of it, which is the iMessage safety stuff that they announced. And I think this is a point that maybe isn't made enough, which is announcing these two features together was an enormous mistake.
Yes. Yep.
Because that is a feature where Apple is also looking at your photos. And essentially, there is a feature for kids under the age of 13 where if you choose to view a photo that the ML has tagged as being explicit, which is different from the CSAM matching entirely, and it's and the conflation of those two things is a huge problem for Apple, it squeals on the kid to their parents. If the feature is turned on and it's only for 12 and under, but still, it's like... And so that got simplified down to Apple is scanning all the photos on your on your phone for nudes and will alert all the authorities and your parents that it's happening. And like the worst case scenario, it's like those two things should be totally separate. And the idea of using ML to warn you about potentially sensitive stuff coming into your phone from other people, I actually think is kind of brilliant, and more people should be able to have access to features
that. We discussed this on the Rebound, where it was, you know, I can think of a number of people, especially in many cases women, who have been subject to seeing things that they didn't want to see. And it's like, well, you should have the option to turn that on for yourself and filter out content you don't want to see. I mean, if you're not going to fix spam messages or allow more robust blocking tools or build those in, then at least provide a way to filter out content that, you know, maybe we just don't want to see. I think that's fine.
Yeah.
I don't actually have an issue with that. I understand the ways that system can be abused as well. And you talked about that. And I know some other folks that we know have brought up. But this, again, comes back to the issue that we were discussing, which is the tools themselves are not evil or good. It is entirely down to enforcement. And you have to be aware of how people will misuse them and prevent that insofar as you can, but no system is perfect.
But in this case, I think Apple got so caught up in how clever they were being, and they didn't really think about the PR ramifications of all this stuff, especially of it being like, it's 2021. I wish I could say that things were different, but the truth is everything's going to get flattened down into a very simple message. And this very simple message was that Apple's looking at all your photos, and that's bad, right? And that was that's a PR misstep on their part in rolling these out when they I know that they're of a kind because they're protection features for children, but boy, this was not a pair of features to roll out together. Like, this should have been a staged rollout over time with different messages so that they could be processed individually and not flattened together into something that's way worse than actually what's going on here, even though some of what's going on here is at least worth thinking about. So Yeah, I think in the end, given that and the fact that they released the FAQ and then they had their security guy talk to Matthew Panzerino and then they had Joanna Stern talk to Craig Federighi and whoever ends up when Tim Cook's on 60 Minutes or something that shows you that they blew it. They didn't understand what they were stepping in here.
Yep. Yep. And we'll see. Maybe they'll do better with the next thing they announce.
But I don't know. I spent a lot of my week looking at macOS Monterey again. So, you know, let's talk about that next time, maybe. I don't know.
Sure.
Well, thank you all for being Six Color subscribers. We appreciate it. And we'll be back next week. But until then, bye, Dan.
Bye, Jason.